everyone, it's another episode of Glitch Free Gaming. It's episode number 143. Hooray!
Hey.
Seem to have a lot of trouble with these bloody podcasts. I think we should just give it up.
We need them live. No more recording.
I just do them live, yeah. That would bypass the entire problems that we're having.
Yeah. I mean, like, properly live. Like, we're going to do, like, Dave Chappelle and just only do them live, no recordings afterwards. if you hear the podcast, you hear it. If you don't, it's gone.
Right, so you have to follow us wherever we are.
Yeah, exactly. Or like Prince, and we'll just show up in the middle of like a fucking park and be like, yeah, we're doing a game podcast now. Didn't tell anyone. Should have known.
Yeah. Respect. Yes, what we are referring to is the slight technical difficulty we've been having with the podcast. Last week's episode at the time of recording, we just managed to get it up. We were having a bit of a problem with our podcast provider. We need to be having words, but hopefully that's all sorted and everything. And so that this episode that you're listening to, hopefully you're listening to it on time.
Yeah, and hopefully we're both in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. Yeah, it's been fun and games. But speaking of fun and games, Kieran, what have you been busy with this week?
A lot of the same stuff as last week, actually.
All right, okay.
So I played a lot more Ratchet and Clank. I think I'm nearing the end, or at least the end of the original game. I don't know if there's much beyond that. But that Ratchet and Clank game is great. You know, I talked a bit about it last week. It looks fantastic. It plays fantastic. They changed the levels. Like, you know, it's that feeling where the level design is almost exactly the way that it was in the first game, but they've changed it in enough ways to make it feel new and feel, you know, and all the changes feel like improvements. That it doesn't feel like, oh, they just changed this for the sake of changing. It's like they changed this because Ratchet and Clank was in the early PS2 game, and you know they were still kind of, it was one of Insomniac's earliest games, you know, they were kind of still learning how to do that game. And you know, like six games later or however many Ratchet and Clank games there are, like they, you know, they learned how to make better levels than the first Ratchet and Clank, and they've done that in this. So I'm enjoying that a lot. It's fun. That movie's out next Friday, and I'm going to go see it, and I've heard bad things about it.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently it's not so hot, but...
Right.
Hey, we shall see. Oh, what else? Dark Souls 3, which I know you love.
Oh, yeah.
It's real good. I beat a bunch of the bosses.
Excellent, okay.
Found the bunch of bonfires. I hit things with my sword.
Did you dodge things?
I rolled. I put on too much armor and I fat rolled because I was wearing too much armor and was too heavy. I now have, I can't remember how many I had last week, but I have 9 Estus flasks that are upgraded twice. So at this point, they basically heal all my health and I can do that 9 times, which is pretty great.
Alright, okay.
Because I think I mentioned it last week, like, you get to allocate whether your SS flasks heal your health or your magic.
Yes,
or
yeah.
Your FP, I think they call it.
Yeah, and you're not a magic user.
No, I've not been using magic at all. You also use that magic bar for skills, which is like, something Dark Souls has always had is either you can, like, equip things in both hands or you can switch on the fly with triangle to hold your sword in both hands.
Right, okay.
And you get like different attacks and you do a bit more damage with that, but you can't block properly because you're blocking with a sword.
Right, okay.
And in that game, L1 was always block and L2 is a parry. And I can't remember what, because I never really used swords like dual hand much in the original Dark Souls. So I can't remember what L2 used to do, but now if you hold L2 and then do one of the regular attacks, you do a skill attack, which does more damage, and I think some of them can actually be parries and stuff as well that do a lot more damage. But they're kind of slower and harder to hit with. But they use some of your magic bar. And so the only time I've used any magic bar is I've occasionally been doing one of those attacks, but not very often. But yeah, I'm enjoying that game so far. I'm not finding it super difficult compared to like Bloodborne so far.
Right.
I'm not sure if it will eventually get super difficult. But it's also one of those games I don't really want to go into any specifics about it because it's a bit spoilery.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's awesome. It's a really good Dark Souls game. The first one that I think I will probably play to the finish. And maybe I'll go back and play Dark Souls 1 fully or play Dark Souls 2 fully or something. Or play Dark Souls 2 at all. Or play Demon's Souls. I don't know, it's a game.
Cool.
But yeah, those are kind of the two biggies that I've been playing over and over. I don't know if I should play Death Nails on PS4. I jumped back onto Metal Gear Solid 5 briefly.
Alright, any reason, or were you just...
I was watching a gaming website that were finishing their playthrough of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Right.
And I was like, man, I really like that game, I should play some more of that. And that game's still pretty great.
Cool.
But there's not a lot to do once you're kind of finished it, and it's not... It's weird, like, I've replayed every Metal Gear Solid at least a couple of times.
Yep.
Metal Gear Solid 3 more than a couple of times because it's my favourite.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really see myself starting Metal Gear Solid 5 from the start again. Like, I don't see myself replaying the whole thing again because it's a really fun game. It's a fun open world, stuff like that. But I don't know, there's so little story in it. It just doesn't feel like there's much incentive to go back and, you know, redo those missions and stuff.
Right, yeah.
It makes me wish that actually that towards the end of Metal Gear Solid 5, you unlock challenge versions of, like, some of the earlier missions. And it makes me wish that they had chosen better missions for those. Because a lot of them are, like, boss fights and, you know, missions where the parasite unit shows up, which are the kind of, they're essentially boss characters, but I don't really, they're not the missions I have any interest in actually, you know, playing a hard mode version of. I'd rather play, like, there's a couple of, like, three or four of those missions that are, you know, of the main missions is where you're kind of breaking into a kind of big area and you're sneaking through, like, past a bunch of guys, and those are the kind of missions I would rather play on hard mode.
Uh-huh.
But that's not an option, so... Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anything new I played. Oh, I played the Doom beta.
Alright, okay.
The multiplayer beta for that new Doom game. It's very Halo.
Oh,
and
no.
Not very Doom. It's kind of annoying in a way because so it looks great, and that's playing on PS4, so it looks great, runs at solid 60, like it's really good from technical standpoint.
Uh-huh.
The guns are really fun to shoot, and the movement and the jumping stuff really fast and really fun, and then there's the fact that it's all built around a loadout system, kind of like the modern Halos and like Call of Duty and stuff, which means that all of the guns kind of have to be balanced to fit in a loadout.
Right.
Which is my, like, I dislike loadout systems in shooters in general. I think they're garbage, and they, you know, they work in games like Call of Duty where the differences between different guns is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, people that are super into Call of Duty will be like, this gun is better than this gun. But realistically, like, you see someone in Call of Duty and you shoot them and they die. Like, it doesn't matter how powerful and fast your gun is. They're going to die because the time to kill is so low in that game.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
In games like Halo and this new Doom, people could take a few more hits because they're a slightly more old-school, like, arena-based shooters. But as a result, in old school arena based shooters, weapon pickups would be scattered throughout the level in kind of hard to reach locations for the more powerful of them,
uh-huh.
So that you could have more powerful of them so that you can prevent people from trying to get them by knowing where they are and, you know, protecting that part of the map and stuff like that. And so you end up with these choke points of people fighting over the better guns, and whoever wins gets the better gun and gets maybe another couple extra kills from it. But it means you have better guns, you have rocket launchers that do a ton of damage, that kind of stuff. In this, you have a loadout that has two slots in it, and they both feed from the same pool of weapons, so those weapons all need to be balanced to be similar kind of strengths, essentially. So the rocket launcher is garbage. Like, it's super weak. Like, you could take a good 3 or 4 rockets before dying. Like, direct hits, not even, like, splash damage. Splash damage, you fucking may as well not even be getting hit. It's insane.
Right.
The shotgun is pretty decent up close. And it's, again, all these guns are really fun to shoot. But I still wasn't finding the shotgun to be very satisfying to use. The assault rifle was alright. It was a pretty decent assault rifle, but it's interesting as a beta, because it has made me like lose pretty much all interest in Doom as a multiplayer game. But it's kind of sparked my interest in the single player a bit more, because the single player is presumably not going to need to be balanced the same way, and is presumably going to be balanced more for running, gunning, blowing up squishy demons.
Yes.
Which presumably means these weapons are going to feel a lot more powerful, or at least, you know, it'll feel like a Doom game, and that, you know, Doom on the higher difficulty, some enemies would take a bit more damage, but, you know, your weapons still felt like they were doing the job. So I'm hoping, because the shooting and stuff was really good in this multiplayer, it was just kind of the balancing and the, you know, that kind of the loadout stuff and the Halo-ish parts of it that I wasn't super fond of that kind of killed it for me. It's kind of making me hope that the single player Doom experience is going to be quite good, but
cool.
Don't know. That game's out next month.
All right.
I think. Yeah, May. I think everything's out in May.
Yes, yeah.
The fact there's another multiplayer beta out in May, I think, because I think the Overwatch beta hits.
Right, okay.
Or that may actually be the end of this month. It's weird. There's been a lot of multiplayer first-person shooter betas recently, with Battleborn and Doom and Overwatch.
Uh-huh.
And I'll probably play them all and decide which one I'm going to buy. So they're good for that, at least. Oh man, I didn't really play a lot, did I? That was kind of it, I think.
Alright, okay.
I can't think of anything else I played. Unless I'm blanking on it. The only other thing was a board game, which we both played.
Yes, we did, yeah.
Are you okay with going on that just now?
What we can do, hang on, because I've not got too much to go over, so we can get onto that.
Okay, what have you been playing then?
Cool. I have been playing a bit like you. I went over some older things I've been playing. So I checked out the new expansion pack that came out for the Sentinels of the Multiverse app, and I've played 2 games of that. For anyone that, you know, doesn't have the game, it's more of the same. They've added in it's the second last part of the season pass, volume 1, so it is the Wrath of the Cosmos expansion, which is a big box expansion you could buy for the physical game. So this is just the digital version for it. Yeah, it's good. Cool. It's all right. More is the same. I like it, can't get enough of it. So very good. I was meaning to go back to Project Crosszone 2.
Is this going to be the equivalent of you constantly playing Project Crosszone, where we spend the entire year with you going, I meant to play Project Crosszone 2.
No.
Never did.
No,
never
no,
got around.
No, this was quite weird. What had happened was I said, right, I'm going to go back to it because I got stuck with, I think the last time we spoke, I got stuck with Hyrule Warriors and I haven't really went back to it. And I thought, right, well, I'll go back to Project Crosszone because I feel like that. And so turned on the 3DS, and I don't know why, and I found my little folder with my arcade classics in. And for the past 2 or 3 nights, I've ended up being playing a combination of Outrun and Super...
Outrun's great.
Yep. So I was doing that and playing Outrun and having a blast with that. And then I thought, you know what? I've not played Hang-On or Super Hang-On in a long time. And I was never good at Hang-On because, you know, you jumped on the bike and I don't know... Did you know this about Super Hang-On where you jump on the bike and the bike automatically goes? You know, you've got a brake, but the bike automatically accelerates to a certain speed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you were on the old bikes, you had a brake, but you had a throttle. The throttle would work once you hit a certain speed. So it would go up to, I think, 199, and then to go any faster than that, you use the throttle to kind of open it up, and it went faster.
Okay.
So that was something that a lot of people didn't know, because they thought, oh, the bike's already going. The only thing I need to do is concentrate leaning
yeah.
on the bike and using the brake. No, you had to use that as well. I found out after, 25 years possibly, that there was another boost button.
Really?
Yeah, I discovered this on the port on the 3DS. So there's actually 2 buttons you need to do. So the bike goes fast, and then if you use the throttle, it goes faster. But to go fastest, you have to use this super boost. I'm not too sure if it's called super boost. I'm not going to look it up, but let's just assume it is. It's super boost. And so tonight on the way home, I did something that I've not done in 25 years of playing Hang-On, which was finish an entire stage. So I was quite proud of that. I thought, yay! And it just goes to show those games are still fun. I do like Super Hang-On, Outrun, and Space Harrier.
Space Harrier is the only one of those that I bought.
Oh, really?
But I keep meaning to buy Outrun because I love Outrun.
Oh, Outrun's just amazing.
Let me pick up that. I forgot the name of it already. The game I linked you to before yesterday, I think.
Oh, yes.
That looks a lot like Outrun. It's on 3DS. eShop.
Yes, I don't think it's on the eShop yet. It's coming.
Oh, is it not?
Oh, don't tell me that it's already out. I didn't see it.
It may be. It may be out in America. Maybe what it was.
Ah, I didn't see it because I actually went looking for it.
It looks cool though.
Yeah, I went looking in the new releases and I couldn't see it. So I will have a look again and see what I can see.
I could be wrong. I kind of just skimmed it and saw pictures and was like, yeah, this looks like something Michael like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And me.
Yes.
Because I also like it.
So, yeah, I did like it. Apart from that, I have not really been playing many video games. I did pick up and I have played the tutorial, which is a whole 5 minutes, if that, of Star Fox Zero. So I...
Yeah.
A couple of days early. Star Fox Zero, for anyone that's been listening or hasn't listened to the podcast, and even for those that have, Star Fox Zero is one I've been flirting with since we first found out about it. I thought it looked interesting, it was going to be quite good. Kieran has thought it was going to be shit.
Yeah, I like Platinum.
Yeah.
They make good games. Nothing about anything they've shown for that game has ever looked interesting to me.
I'm still interested. Obviously, I wouldn't have bought it otherwise. The little bit of the demo, it's interesting what they're trying to do. They're trying to get you to use everything that the Wii does. So, you know, use the pad, use the 2 screens, use motion controls, use all your you know, shoulder buttons. And
Before Splatoon, I would have been more skeptical of this.
Uh-huh.
But Splatoon's motion controls were great. Like I played that game with the motion controls on.
Right.
Pretty much the whole time.
The 5 minutes or so that I was mucking about when we were getting ready to podcast, felt interesting. I didn't feel horrible, and at any point...
Feel that in the back of the box.
Yeah, controls are not horrible, Mike, Glitchy Gaming.
didn't feel horrible.
So one of the things that it did is at any time you can click on the left stick and it recalibrates the reticule.
Mm-hmm.
So the motion controls are, they're controlling your aiming reticule. And at any time you can click the left stick, and it centers it back to the center of the screen.
Splatoon was the same as that. It had it was mapped to X, I think.
Right.
X or Y, I think it was.
Quite a simple thing. You know, mm-hmm. just to have that at any time it's very accessible. So, you know, it takes no time. You're not taking you away from the game or anything. You can just do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am interested to see how I get on with it. It looks very pretty.
Always good.
Yeah, it does look good. I was looking at some gameplay footage and things like that. And, yeah, I think it is going to be one of the games... Fingers crossed it's the space combat game I've been looking for a while.
Yeah, there's not been a whole lot of kind of arcadey kind of combat stuff
like
that.
So I'm hoping this is it. But apart from that, I, like you, have been playing board games.
Yeah, so, tons of board games. You played way more than I did.
Well, we got two more board games that we, for the site, for review.
Mm-hmm.
One of the games is a Kickstarter game that was successfully kickstarted.
There was only one on Kickstarter. I thought they both were.
No. Only one of them were. And it's...
I'd assume every board game was Kickstarter at this point.
It's a little card game called Manasage. And it's for 3 to 6 players. There's a story about that. We might... get into it at one point, but it's for 3 to 6 players.
Weird, Mike. I heard that it was for 2 to 6 players.
Fuck it. No, I'm not getting into that. It's a game for 3 to 6 players. The idea is that you are all magicians, and you are casting spells. So the game comes with 6 suits of cards, and they're spell cards. The game is played with, if you're playing with up to 5 players, you'll play with 5 suits of cards. If you're playing with 6 players, you'll play with 6 of them. The suits of card, cards are... you get 12 cards in a suit, and they're numbered 1 through to 8. And there's various combinations. So, you know, there's 2 5s, 2 4s, 2 3s, various combinations to bring you up to the number 12. What you're doing on your turn is you will start off the spell. You will pick the suit, and you'll play the card. You also choose the direction you want the round to go in, clockwise or anti-clockwise. Now, the person who's next, they have to play a card. If they don't play a card, the spell hits them and they get damaged. Okay?
Okay.
So when you start off the spell, the whole point of this game is you're playing for victory points. In this game, they are little crystal shards. You get cardboard chits and they're shards. So... you start off and you play the spell. That's the suit. That's the spell. And we put a little crystal, a little victory point on that. You'll get that victory point if you don't get hit by the spell.
Okay.
Okay, so the person next to you, it's their turn to play. What they can do is they can play, play the spell suit, but if they do, it has to be a number that's higher than the number you played. Okay.
Okay.
So if you played a number two, and you played a number two of the Quake spell, then the person next to you can either play from the Quake spell, they can play a number two, so they can play the same number, or they can play a number higher. So anywhere between two and eight.
Then next person would need
to play a three, then a four or five. Yeah. Okay. What you can do, if you don't have the suit, then you can play any other card, but you don't get a victory point, you don't get any spell effects or anything. It just essentially you get rid of a card from your hand and it goes on to the next person.
Okay.
But what you can do is if you play the same number but it's not the same suit. So you're looking to play, you need to play a Quake card. You don't, you play a Frost card, but you play the same number. You play the number two.
Isn't this just...
It's like Uno.
Like Uno or like Switch.
Yes, yeah.
The whole you can play the same number, but it changes the suit thing.
No, the suit doesn't change.
Okay.
Right, so the spell suit is... You know, that's the one you've started, right?
Uh-huh.
For you to get a victory point as well, you need to play the same suit and the number has to be higher. Okay. Equal to or higher, okay? If you don't have the same suit, if you don't have that in your hand, then you have to play a card, otherwise the spell's going to hit you. And your only option is you have to play same number or higher.
Okay.
If you play same number, it does a counter spell. What counter spell does is it changes the direction of the game.
All right. So it just fires it backwards rather than changing.
Yeah. So it fires it backwards.
Okay.
You can choose if you want it to counter. If you don't want to fire it back to the person that's just played, you can let it go. But obviously, it's a bit more chaotic if you fire it back to them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's your two options you've got playing cards. So you can play suit. If you play the suit, you have to play same number or higher, or you don't have to play the suit, any number as long as it's higher, or if you play a number, you can counter spell, you can knock, you know, send it back in the opposite direction. There are also what they call meta magic cards. These are basically spell enhancers. You can play a card and it's called the mirror. What mirror does is it's an exact duplicate of the last card that's been played. There is a spell called Absorb. What Absorb does is it ends the round straight away, and instead of taking damage, you don't take damage, you gain those cards into your hand.
Okay.
It adds a couple of other things to it as well. One of the other things that you can do is once you empty your hand, so when you're playing a round of, you know, you're playing the spell, if you empty your hand, you play all the cards in your hand, you do a mana surge. Essentially, you get two victory points. So during a spell, if you manage to empty your hand, you get two victory points, and then then you draw up to five cards. Everyone starts the game with five cards in their hand.
Okay.
The round ends when somebody cannot play a card. They're hit by that spell. You work out the damage, and the damage would be equal to the number of those little shards that are placed on cards. Person hit by the spell takes that number, so say there was five cardboard chits, they take five damage. Damage is represented by taking the cards and placing them in front of you. So they don't become part of your hand, they just sit there in front of you.
Yeah, they're just a marker, basically.
Once you get five pieces of damage, think of that as that's it, that's your life, you're dead.
Yeah.
Okay, once you die, you need to rebirth. How you rebirth is you discard all the cards that you have in your hand, you pay a crystal shard, if you have one, and the damage that's sitting in front of you, that becomes your new hand.
Okay.
So that's what would happen at the end of a round. You calculate the damage, the person takes the damage. If they need to rebirth, they rebirth. And before we start off again, everyone now has a choice, apart from the person that took damage. Everyone has a choice. You can either leave your hand as it is, or you can draw up to five cards. Because the idea is if you don't draw up to five cards, you may, you know, it might be easier for you to get a mana surge to get those two bonus points. That's it. The game says first one to 12 wins. So you need 12 of these little shards. That's it. It's quick.
Sounds all right. Yeah. Sounds quite simple.
Quite simple. Can be quite fun. Chaotic. Definitely chaotic. It's that hot potato. You know, oh shit, pass the bomb. It is. It's just pass the bomb. Moving it along, and there's hints of Uno there where you can, you know, play a card. You can either play the number or you can play the color. And then it's got these little things of the rebirth and the mana source flung in there as well.
The rebirth stuff sounds quite cool.
Yeah, quite cool. I quite liked it. The only thing that we found was that playing up to 12 points, you're taking this little simple card game and it's dragging on to half an hour.
Yeah, it sounds like the more people would be in it, the longer it would take as a result.
Yeah.
Because everyone's trying to, you know, reach a relatively high target.
Yeah. So 30 minutes for this game, too much. The game, it's good in little blasts, but once you get to, say, you know, 20 minutes, anything over that, it starts to feel tedious.
Yeah.
So what we've found, and we suggested it in the review as well, just bring that down. Don't go for 12 points. If you think 10's enough, go for 10. Be flexible with it as well, because the last thing you want to be doing is playing the game as a chore.
Yeah.
The last thing I will say about it is Kieran was making jokes about he'd heard somewhere that it was a two-player game. What it looks like is the review copy that we received, there's a manual that mentions two players. But when you go to Board Game Geek listing and you go to the company's website now, it looks like the game is being touted as a three-player game. The reason this is important is we tested it as a two-player game and it is absolutely dire. It's horrible. It plays like two-player Uno, where, you know, when you used to play Uno with, you know, if it was just your sister and you and your sister playing, you would play a card and it would be, oh, reverse action. So that means you skip a turn. Then there's a skip a turn card, so you skip a turn again. And she just ends up playing all these cards and unloading them on you. That's what happens in a two-player game of Mana Surge. The whole thing about the spells is cast aside, and all you're doing is you're just trying to empty your hand as quickly as possible. There's no backward and forward. It doesn't feel like a game. It just feels like two people trying to play solitaire. It's really, really bad. I think the people Daily Magic Games have obviously discovered this and they're changing all their online material and things. Because they're a Kickstarter, they're not a big company, so maybe they've discovered this after the boxes have been put into print.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, so, but we...
Or it could even be that maybe... Well, like, how much does it mention two-player stuff? Does it say anything specific about it, or does it just throw away thing that says you can play two-player?
No, well, the box says for this two to six players. And the rule book, it says... so I told you about the counter spell where it changes direction.
Yeah.
There's a little blurb here, and it says counter spell in a two-player game.
Okay, so it does mention stuff like
that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird then. So I could say, like, if it just said... If it was just on the player numbering thing, then sure, it could just be like a typo or something.
Yeah.
You know, it could just be a misprint. But if there's actual sections of the, you know, of the book that's like, hey, this is the specific rule for playing this two-player, and then two-player isn't very good, maybe it's just, hey, we realise two-player isn't very good, so...
Yeah, so...
I'm gonna take that out for now.
Yeah, so, you know, we had prepared the review with... two-player stuff in it, and then in the process of getting it ready and everything, we found all the company stuff online, and it had it removed, so we removed it from the review.
Yeah,
but
that makes sense.
If that's not the case, if the stuff is, then we'll, you know, we'll go back in and put that stuff in, but...
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things that you should be keeping an eye out at your local game shop, and if you see boxed copies in the shop that, for example, say 2 to 6 players on it. You maybe add the 2 player bit back onto your review because that's how they're selling the game.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
You know, if it is just, hey, the review copies say something that the retail ones don't, then yeah, fine.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That happens.
It does, you
know,
yeah.
A lot of the review copies for games tend to be things that are, you know, like first run, first prints and,
yes.
You know, or even sometimes like stuff that's not out. Or
yeah, exactly.
Even if, you know, we're a small website, we get stuff a bit later than most people.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, still, it's usually their review copies that they had from the start.
Exactly.
You know, it's still early
yes,
copies.
Yes, yeah. So, Manasurge hasn't even shipped to its backers yet.
Hmm.
And so...
Anything could change.
Anything could change, yeah. So, we know that it should be shipping out in either May or June. And I think it's coming to your friendly local shops around about that time as well. So, anything could come... you know, could change in that time as well. But yeah, but otherwise, if you are looking for a quick little card game for your gaming group, like we said in the review, you should check it out. I personally, it didn't do it for me. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I have, you know, 5 or 6 games that are in my collection that are fast, quick games that can be played as filler. Manasurge, unfortunately, you know, it doesn't run in and replace any of those.
Yeah.
So, yes, it will get played, but, you know, it's not going to get played instead of Flux, for example.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Kieran, I do think you would like this one. The artwork is absolutely stunning on it.
Yeah, you know, I'm like for pretty Kickstarter games.
And even it is one of those that, like you say, we both have them in our collection where it's, yeah, I'm not going to play it too much, but it's really pretty. It is one of those. It's a well-made game.
Yeah, it's taking up shelf space, but,
yes.
You know, it's nice to have there.
Yes, yeah. And I think the fact that it is a well-made game and the components are very well-made and the cards are nice and glossy and they're nice to feel and hold and things, I think that's also one of the reasons that we kind of took our time and we've kind of floundered around a little bit with the whole issue of is it 2-player, is it 3-player?
Yeah.
You know, because it's a well-made product and sometimes mistakes happen, so...
Yeah, but especially Kickstarter.
Exactly,
stuff.
Like, yeah.
It's kind of the point of Kickstarter stuff is...
True.
Yeah.
You know, if it was Fantasy Flight, it would be a different story. You know, we'd probably be being a little bit harsh on it.
If it was Fantasy Flight, there would have been, like, an extra book explaining how to play a 2-player, and then they wouldn't have put that in the final one or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Don't use these 100 miniatures if you're playing a 2-player game.
Yeah.
I love Fantasy Flight games, like the few that I've played, but man, they can be pretty complex no reason.
Absolutely. So the other game that we had for review is a game called Thunder and Lightning. This is a 2-player game. It's a re-implementation of a game. So the game's by a designer called Richard Borg. And he had a game back in 2000 called Hera and Zeus. 2-player card game, and Thunder and Lightning is a re-implementation of that, and instead of now being Hera versus Zeus, you're now Thor versus Loki, so it is now in Norse mythology, and the game is absolutely stunning. You get 2 sets of decks, so 2 decks of cards, 50 cards in each, and have you ever played Stratego?
I've not. I've always meant to. But
right.
One of those games I never played.
Okay. I think we spoke about this briefly on the last podcast. I think because you looked for images of this.
I can't remember. I think we might have
done it online, offline.
Yes. Yeah.
I think we did. Yeah. But yeah. So the game is played with these 2 decks of cards. The cards, for all intents and purposes, the decks are identical in terms of mechanics of what they do. So the decks represent 2 armies that Thor and Loki have, and they're battling each other. The game there's a card in each of the decks that the other player wants. So there is the Odin's Crown in Loki's deck, and that is the object of Thor. That's what he needs to get. So if he reveals that card in your deck, that's it, game over. On the same way, inside Thor's deck is Odin's ring, I think it is. And if Loki reveals that from the deck, game's over, he wins. The way the game works is you start off with a starting hand of 9 cards. And you have to place, you have to create a battlefield. Okay, so Kieran, you would have played Yu-Gi-Oh! Or any card collectible game where it starts off and you have a field of cards. And you place your cards face down and they will be directly opposite your opponent's cards.
Yeah.
You're creating that kind of battlefield. You're creating, it's three cards across in a row. And it can go 4 deep. Okay, so you're creating a battlefield of 12 cards. Okay, your front row of cards can attack or challenge your opponent's front row of cards. Okay, within your cards, you've got beast monsters. Your monsters have a point value on them, so you'll have, you know, monsters at a point value of 2, and you'll have strong monsters with a point value of 6. When cards challenge each other, you turn them face up so that you can see what you've got, and the card with the highest number wins. It stays on the field, and your opponent's card, it's dead. Yeah, goes to the discard pile. Okay. There are other cards. There are mythological cards. So the magic cards, essentially, spell cards. You can play these. You don't have to play them on the field. You can play them directly from your hand, and they will have an effect. So, for example, there are cards called ravens. There are 9 of these cards in each deck. They're quite common. What they do is they allow you to challenge any card in your opponent's front row. So, in other words, you can reveal it. If they reveal it and it's a monster card that can fight, so it's got a point value between 2 and 7, then you turn it around and it stays in the field. No problem. If it's any other card, so if it's a card like the ring, for example, or you get shield walls, which essentially block any attack and defeat any card apart from... There's one specific card that they cannot beat, which is the female archer. That card doesn't have a point value. So that Odin's ring, spell cards and things like that, they would go straight to the discard pile.
Okay.
So your ravens are, they only have a point value of 1, but they're also these kind of spell cards. And so they're more valuable to you as spells. But sometimes the game in the first... The first round, no one can attack. Okay. Basically, what you need to do is build your battlefield first.
Yeah.
Get everything
prepared.
Prepare, and then you can start attacking each other. So sometimes when you need to play a card to build, bolster up your battlefield, sometimes you're going to have to play maybe one of the ravens because it's all you have in your hand.
Yeah.
But normally you would maybe want to keep them in your hand. So the idea about the game and the way the whole strategy comes in with it is you're building this grid of cards in front of you. There may be some cards. Generally, once a card is revealed and it's there, you can't take it off the battlefield unless it gets defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be problematic. So you can kind of shuffle the cards around on the field.
But you can't straight up remove it from the field.
And sometimes, there's certain cards where it's advantageous to have them on the field, but they have certain rules with them. They can only be placed in the front row. They cannot be moved. You cannot move them, but they give you extra actions and extra benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So there may come a time where it's easy and, you know, it's beneficial for you to have that card out in the open and on the field. But then as the game changes, you may not need it there.
Yeah.
You know, so how do I get rid of it? I'm, you know, have I got a card in my hand that I've been keeping just in case I do need to get rid of that card, or am I counting on the fact that you're going to be very aggressive and start attacking? And it brings into this whole strategy, and you're also doing a little bit of card counting as well, because, like I said, both decks are the exact same. In terms of, they both have fighters worth 5 points. Loki's ones may be called Frost Giants, but Thor's are called Tree Trolls, but that's it. It's just a little bit of theming.
And yeah, but they're basically the same.
But they're the exact same thing. They do the exact same thing, the same point value, and if there's any special attributes on them, they both do the same thing. And there's also a little number at the bottom of the card that tells you how many copies of that card exist. So you're trying to do bookkeeping on yourself. At the same time, you're looking, you're going, right, shit, how many Ravens has Kieran played? Has he also played that card that allows him to get the Ravens back? One of the other things as well is that, so I said to you that there's these two cards, there's Odin's Crown and there's the Ring, where you're trying to keep those. You don't want your opponent to find those ones. So logic should say to you, well, if it's in your draw deck, he's not going to find it. That's no problem at all. If it's in your hand, should be safe, yeah? Because he can't get at it.
Sure.
No. There's Ravens and there's other cards which allow you to challenge cards in your opponent's hand. So you can play a Raven and you can say, right, I want to see the card that's in the middle of your deck. And they have to show you that card.
Okay.
So you end up with, if you've got this card in your hand, it becomes a little bit of a hot potato as well. Yeah. I need to bluff. I need to make you think I don't have it in my hand. Or I need to make you think I played it on the field. And the games change quite a bit. So my fiance and I played a couple of games. One of the games that we played was on the second draw. I drew out Odin's Ring, had it in my hand, and there was other things happening in the field. So she was preoccupied with what was going on in the field, and she didn't think for a second that I had that card in my hand. What had happened? I think we played a card. I think my fiance played a card and she had to reveal to everyone cards from her draw pile.
Okay.
So she turns them over and if they're, that's what it was. Yeah, it's, I think it's like a reinforcement card. So you turn over four cards and if they're, fighters, they go into your front line. If not, they come into your hand. So she reveals Odin's crown and I go, right, fuck, that's what I'm after. but I haven't won the game yet. She's turned it over and it goes into her hand. So we then had three rounds where I just had Ravens and I'm just playing Ravens from my hand and I'm guessing. Let me see that one. She's, no, it's not that one. Let me see that,
not one. That one. Keep going.
Yeah. And it turned into sort of, like gin rummy or go fish or something.
Yeah.
And that worked really well. One of the other games that we played ended up, so the other way that you can defeat your opponent is if you defeat all their cards on the battlefield.
Uh-huh.
And I did that quite early on because we both played two rounds and she decided to go on the offensive. She was going to attack. But what she didn't count on was she had four cards on her battlefield, which should be enough to protect you. But there's a card that allows you to play one extra action. On your turn you get a maximum of three actions. There is a card that it brings it up to four. I played that card, it let me get four actions and I cleared a field. So we went from a game that took about 40 minutes to a game that took five.
Yeah.
And both as enjoyable as each other.
It sounds quite fun.
It is. It's a very, very good two-play game. I know you played, what was that, the Angel game?
Oh, Regnum Metallica.
Yes, yeah, and I know you enjoyed that quite a bit. Yeah. I think you would enjoy this more.
Let me give it a shot. I think if nothing else, my girlfriend will be quite into the theming
of
it.
Oh, yeah.
She loves that stuff.
The artwork is absolutely beautiful. The artwork on the cards is stunning. The game comes with these two little wooden blocks that the game comes with, and they don't do anything. It's just like little stats.
It's just kind of
yeah, and it has this kind of outline of Loki on the one and an outline of Thor on the other, and they just sit in front of you. That's all they do. But they're just really gorgeous. The only negative that I've got about this game so far is that its recommended retail price is like £29, so close to £30 for a card game. It's beautiful. The box is lovely. It's good quality stuff. But
a little bit high.
Yeah, it is a little bit high when you compare it to... you can pick up a copy of Takenoko, which has a recommended retail price of £30, so the same as that. Carcassonne, either Star Wars Carcassonne or original, the base game goes for £25.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not. It's not an arbitrary figure. Oh, £28 for a card game is too much. In comparison to other games that we have,
it's a bit pricey.
Yeah. Yeah, other than that, really cool. So we will have a review of it coming up. Other than that, there is a big game that we both played. Huge.
It's definitely a big game, big box.
Yes.
I had to borrow a bag off of someone to get it back from the office because I got mine delivered at work and it's way too big to fit in my bag because it's massive.
Ah, right.
This game is Star Wars Rebellion.
Yes.
I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yes, I am, yeah. So this is the big box game that just came out last week as well. We've been speaking about it on the podcast for a little while.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it because of some of the mechanics interesting.
Yeah. So the game it's a two-player game. One player plays as the Empire, one player plays as the Rebellion. And it's asymmetrical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an asymmetrical... It's a war game, but it's a very simplified war game in a lot of ways. And it's still a massive, super complicated game, but it's not... Like, they simplify the combat and stuff to a degree where it's... The war part of the war game is less important, and the Star Wars story part of the game is much more important.
Uh-huh.
And it's that's what I found. I don't know about you.
Yes, yeah. So you've got two different mechanics as well. So where the Empire, the object of the game is to find the hidden rebel base.
Yeah, and destroy
it. And destroy it, yeah.
It's not enough just to find it. You can narrow it down, find out where it is, but you need to get in there and either invade that planet or blow it up with Death Star or whatever.
Yeah. And the rebels, they're trying to slowly but surely chip away at the
reputation of the
yeah.
I think it's the rebels basically there's a time track on one side, and the rebels have a marker that starts at like 13 or something like that, and the empire doesn't really have anything. It's just there is a time, and the time goes up one per turn. And if the rebel marker ever meets the time marker, then the rebels win.
Yeah.
And the Empire has stuff that can make the rebel marker go back, and the rebels have one that can bring it closer.
Yes.
And so it's this real back and forth of the rebels are just trying to basically wait it out and reduce the amount of time they have to wait it out.
Yeah.
And the Empire are trying to make sure they can find, destroy the base in that time. Uh-huh. Who did you play as? Because I played as the Empire.
I played as the Empire as well.
Okay, cool. I like the Empire. The Empire have more miniatures.
Yes, they do, swords. Yeah. So the whole mechanic of the... Well, not mechanic, but the whole way that you do things within the game is you send characters on missions.
You have a pool of leaders which goes up as the time goes up. Each stop on the time marker will have, a little icon next to it. Either it has a little kind of gear icon thing that's like, hey, you have to build new. I can't remember where it was actually. Was that build new units or is that get a new leader?
So the little there's a little wrench,
Yeah, it's a little wrench
and
and there's
that's
a little.
for building units. And then there's it looks like a little medal. It looks like the medal they pin.
I guess that's one way. I said it looked like the
N
Enterprise.
no, it looks like the it looks like the medal they pin on Luke and Han Solo's chest at the end of Episode
Sure,
Four.
that's probably the intention. Looks like a little Enterprise.
It.
The
It's not the Enterprise.
Enterprise. Wrong mythology. I like that mechanic because it means that both sides are, they're going to get stuff built at the same time. They're going to have the same amount of leaders to do stuff. The leaders seem a bit more important to the rebel side from what I saw. I mean, also they're important to both sides because they are your actions,
Yeah.
basically. So you can use leaders, you can send them on missions based on different cards that you have in your hand, or you can keep them in your pool and then use them to move your armies, basically. If you put a leader on a planet, you can then move stuff from one of the adjacent planets to that planet and invade it. And you deal with all the war gamey stuff that way. But also, you kind of want to keep at least a leader or two in your pool because you use them also to counter
Missions, yes.
counter your opponent's missions. Which is important because some of those missions can be devastating.
Yes, yeah. So you may have a situation. Some of the missions that I was doing when we were playing the game was I had, if you have rebel units on a planet, one of the things, excuse me, that's quite important to the star system. So the entire board of the game is, it comes with these two huge boards, and once they unfold, it becomes the Star Wars galaxy, and there's star systems, there's planets all over. I don't know how, off the top of my head, I don't know how many planets there are.
I don't know. There's a bunch.
Yeah, there are 30 odd of them, but whatever it is it.
Yeah, there's like four or five regions,
Yes, yeah.
which are made up of, again, like four or five different
So
planets.
you've got all these planets, and there are some of them that are populated, and they call these popular systems. And each of these systems have the ability to either be loyal to either the rebels or the Empire. Some of the systems, it's built that they are, what's the word I'm looking for? They are
Don't know.
they are loyal. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word there. They're loyal to one of the factions, and that's never going to change. Coruscant, for example. Coruscant is always the head of the Empire,
Empire.
and it will never change.
The rebels don't have anything that's solid like that, except for the
Naboo?
rebel.
No.
No, they start loyal, but you can invade
Of
them.
course, yes, yeah.
The only thing the rebel has is they have the rebel base, which is its own section, its own like separate section of the board
Yes.
that you put a card next to that kind of tells which planet that represents. But obviously, if the rebels were sitting going, I reinforce my rebel base with more ships and then put them on the board, you would kind of give away the secret location of the.
Exactly.
So they put it on this rebel base space, and then when you find it, they all get moved onto that planet, and you end up with a planet filled with ships.
Yes. So one of the missions that I was trying to do was I had units on one of the planets, I think it was Mustafar. And what happens with that is the minute you have ground troops on a planet, you are subjugating that planet. You're there and you're ruling by fear. That planet, it's not loyal to you, but it's subjugated, and they
Yeah, it has all the same advantages of being loyal, except for.
it doesn't produce as many units. Yeah, so they're kind of grudgingly giving you stuff. They'll build you more stormtrooper armor or something, but they won't, make you a brand new spaceship. But if you can go on a mission, you can change that. You can gain loyalty in that area. And that means they will now produce everything for you, and they do it happily and quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Everyone's all happy. Well, except the rebels. So yeah. I would go, and my idea was, if I could get all of the systems to be loyal to me, then, you know, that would be fine. And my fiance's going, no, fuck that. That's not happening, because she knows how I think as well. So she would keep leaders back. And every time I would go to a planet, what happens is you have to reveal the mission. You explain to your opponent what the mission is, what you're trying to do. And then, you know, you send somebody there. If they oppose you, then what they have to do is they have to send one of their leaders. They can only send certain leaders as well. So each mission has a certain requirement. Basically, you need a certain stat to go there. Mm-hmm. So you place your leader there. If it's being opposed, your opponent places a leader there. And then you both roll dice to see. And the number of dice that you roll is dependent on your stat level of that mission.
Yeah.
And the person with the highest number of successes wins. And if it's you that wins and it's your mission, then you get the benefits of the mission.
Yeah. And otherwise it fails and you do nothing.
You do nothing, yeah.
But also, doing so means that your leader is now on that planet.
Yes.
Like, because every mission has to be done on a planet. You can't just do a mission.
Yeah.
You do a mission on Kashyyyk, or you do a mission on Naboo. You do a mission in, like, in a location.
Yes.
And they'll say on the card, it'll be like, you know, this mission must be done on a rebel loyal planet, or this must be done on an empire loyal planet, yes, or a subjugated planet, yeah, or, you know, whatever. And that's kind of important in its own way, because it means you can do things to try and lure out leaders. And if you're the empire, you can then capture those leaders, yes, and hold them hostage. Yep. Which means they're trapped. I quite like that mechanic as well, because they stay on that planet. Like, you capture them and they stay on that planet for good.
Yeah.
Or until they're rescued.
Yes.
Or you do what I did, where you kidnap Princess Leia, you freeze her in carbonite, hold her there for a bit just to annoy the rebels, then release her. And I released her, and she led me straight back to the rebel base.
Nice.
Which was great. Great. Or, I don't want to go in too much, because just picking up, going through those decks of cards, like, as you're playing,
yes,
and reading out, like, what you can do. And all of them are, like, kind of, you know, heavily themed. It's very, you know,
yeah,
deep in its theme. But, like, just picking up all those cards and going, oh, shit, I can do that.
Yeah, you can do certain things that happened in the film and,
yeah,
and films. Yeah.
Like, one of the few I'll mention is, like, you can... I picked up a card that was, if you've captured a rebel leader, play this on that card. And if you win, you twist their allegiance, and they join the dark side.
Oh, nice.
And you have, and that leader just becomes yours. And I failed to do it because my girlfriend, like, threw everything she had at it to make sure.
Right.
Because that's also the cool thing, is that leaders, again, everything's based on planets. So if a leader is on a planet, they count towards whatever is happening on that planet.
Yes.
So, for example, I tried to turn Chewbacca to the dark side and make him join me.
Uh-huh.
But there had been a failed attempt by the rebels to rescue him just before that. So Han Solo was already there.
Uh-huh.
And so he counted towards the kind of defense of
that
turning, yes, Chewbacca to the dark, yeah, side. You know, which is quite good. So you just imagine Emperor Palpatine sitting, you know, whispering in Chewie's ear, like, come on, join dark side. And Han Solo is shouting on our side, like, no, come on, Chewie. Fuck you doing. Don't be dumb.
Yeah.
Which is great. I like that stuff. It's really smart.
Yeah. It's, you know, you're taking the Star Wars universe and all the stories that you know, and you're creating them your way as well. So one of the decks that the Empire has is a project deck. Mm-hmm. So apart from your usual missions, you can do special projects. One of your special projects may be to work on your Death Star and get the laser working.
Yeah.
And once you've done that, well, you can blow up a planet.
Yeah, so, with the laser card. And then you have to get another laser card to blow up an airplane.
Yes, so...
Which is good, because you Death Stars are crazy.
Yes, you can't just, you know, push a button and fire them up again. They need to charge and all of this. So, did you blow up a planet?
I blew up a planet. I didn't really need to. I just kind of had the Death Star, and I was like... I had my Death Star, and I knew where the Rebel base was, and I was like, "This, I'm not going to get over there with the Death Star." Like, it's,
right.
You know, I've got like 2 turns until the Rebels win, so I can't move the Death Star to the other side of the galaxy. Because, like, my game came very close. It seemed very one-sided for most part, because even with the subjugation stuff, we found at least that the Empire ended up with way more units way quicker.
Yes.
Like, they ended up with a massive army, which you would expect, because they're the Empire. Yep. They ended up with a massive, like, overbearing army, and neither of us were playing super aggressively, so I wasn't losing a massive amount of units. I was just kind of building on it every few turns. Uh-huh. And so I ended up with this massive, overwhelming kind of army that the Rebels just had to avoid for the most part. Like, they made a couple of stands here and there, or they took over some planets, or, like, removed the subjugation of some planets that only had like a couple of ground units on it that I'd left to keep subjugated.
Right.
You know, there's a couple of times I'd left like a stormtrooper on a planet just so that it wasn't sub, you know, it didn't lose its subjugation, but I could move everything else somewhere else more useful.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Rebels then show up and kill that one stormtrooper and then set up a base. But it felt very one-sided for a large portion of it. It felt like the Empire was this big, massive thing that was overbearing and crushing the Rebels. And then you look at the time tracker at the side and you go, actually, if I don't beat the Rebels this next turn, I've lost.
Yeah. Now,
like, I... Yeah.
Yeah, I think... yeah, I kind of felt that as well. You know, I've got all of this stuff. And then you look and, you know, my fiance's... She's just going there. She's going, yeah, okay, that's fine. But in the meantime, she's playing a more cerebral game because I... before we played the game the night before, I did what I normally do and set up the, you know, I set up a game and play a couple of rounds just by myself, just to get a rough idea of how everything works. So it's easier for me to explain it. And I had a look at one or two of the mission cards and the objective cards that the Rebellion have. And a lot of it is, you know, if you have, you know, take a region on the board, and if all of the populous planets are loyal to you, that's when you get one of your reputation points.
Yeah, that one actually came up during our
game. All right.
Yeah, that happened during
because
all of a sudden, I was just noticed my girlfriend had, like, in one turn essentially, played, like, a bunch of missions that took loyalty of a bunch of planets. And I didn't realize till kind of the last one, because I was like, I don't really care, these planets are off over there.
Yeah.
I've got all my stuff subjugated. I'm not going to interfere. I'm not going to waste a leader over there to, you know, stop. And then I realized, oh, she's taking that whole system and she had an objective for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Rebel marker's down a couple more now, so it's closer and closer to me losing.
Yeah. And so whereas you are... It's very thematic as well, because the Empire, it's a very domineering game that you're playing. You want to get as many troops onto the planets as possible, because if you happen either by skill or dumb luck to land on the planet that has the Rebel base, if you put ground troops on there, the Rebellion has to let you know.
Yeah, they have to let you know, and then they have to move all of the units they have on the Rebel base to that planet. And then they're like, well, you know, you moved your one little stormtrooper here. I have an army, so...
Yeah, what the fuck are you going to do about it?
Yeah. And the Rebels also have cards that let them move their base.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. That didn't come up in our game, but it's a cool mechanic from the sounds of it.
Basically, what we did was, you know, I explained the rough rules of the game, and, you know, then we kind of say, we took it the first couple of rounds that we played, it's like, right, now this is what this happens. And we stopped and we did that. So we understood that little bit. Now you do the command phase, and we do that, and you do the missions. And one of the things, because you know we were playing in kind of fragmented sections, my fiance decided no, she was going to do the mission where she switched the rebel base, because the card, and we bought the way we both read the card was that she draws 8 probe cards. Mm-hmm. It's normally 4, but if you've got 2 leaders in the mission, then you draw, you know.
Okay.
So you draw 8 of these probes, and she's obviously she makes a choice of which planet the base is going to be to. Mm-hmm. What the card doesn't say, and it's only in the rule book, is that she has to give those cards back to, she has to shuffle them back into the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason that she was thinking of doing that was, well, now, you know, now there's 9 cards missing from that deck.
Yeah, that would be kind of broken.
Not really, because there are cards, there are missions for the Rebellion, which allows them to take card, see your probe cards.
Uh-huh.
There's cards that allow them to take cards from your probe stash. Not cards from the deck, cards from probes that you've already collected.
Uh-huh. Just to kind of let you forget about them.
Exactly. So you can't remember exactly which ones are in there.
Worth noting for like people listening, the way the probe stuff works is that every turn the Empire gets to launch 2 probes.
Yes.
And basically at the start of the game, the Rebels get to pick a probe from, or a planet from the probe deck to place their base. And they keep that secret. The starting rules. Did you play with just the starting rules, or did you try anything a bit more complicated?
No, we just did starting rules as well.
Yeah, with the starting rules. And the starting rules say don't pick a planet adjacent to any Empire-controlled planet. Which, you know, isn't a massive amount to start with, although there is, you know, a startup thing that's like, this planet's Empire, this has, you know, an AT-AT on it and a, you know, Star Destroyer or whatever. But the Rebels pick their base, keep it face down, hidden, and then the Empire, every turn, gets to take 2 of those cards, and they're slowly narrowing down where the base isn't. But there's a lot of planets, so there's a lot of probe cards.
Yeah.
So it takes quite a few turns, and the Empire has more cards that let them kind of narrow it down a bit by either taking more probes or doing other things.
Yes,
like I said, I released Leia, and it doesn't take me to... Releasing Leia didn't take me to the Rebel base, but the rules of that card say that the leader has to be placed... The captured leader that's been released has to be placed adjacent to the Rebel base, or in the same region as the Rebel base.
Right.
So I didn't know where the Rebel base was, but I'd narrowed it down to like 1 of 4 planets.
Oh.
Which I like that stuff. It's that whole hunt for the Rebel base is kind of the main mechanic that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. It is, like we've said, it's a huge game, both in terms of table space and the amount of components.
Oh, yeah. I had to play on a floor. We don't have a table big enough for it.
Our table was just big enough.
Nah, we didn't have one. But we thought the coffee table was long enough, but it's kind of too thin, so the edges of the board weren't quite on.
Right.
And in hindsight, it probably would have worked fine, but we didn't want to risk it, so we played on the floor.
Uh-huh.
Put down a bunch of cushions, lay on the floor at either side of the board. It was fun.
Yeah, we can't do that with the cats, so...
Understandable.
But... Yeah, it is a fantastic game. I cannot wait to play more of it. We actually didn't finish our game.
All right. Okay.
So, and
it's a long game.
Yeah, it was time. When we started setting up the game, we said we don't know whether we're going to get to finish it, but we want to play it because we were just desperate to play it. So we played it until we were happy, and it was getting later, you know, later on. Work in the morning and things like that. So, but we were really happy with what we played, understood it, and we can't wait to play it again as well.
Yeah, we sat on the Friday night and just were like, okay, this is our night. We're gonna put the new series of Kimmy Schmidt on TV. We're gonna get a couple of drinks, although my girlfriend can't drink alcohol just now, so she was drinking non-alcoholic cider.
Right.
And I was drinking a couple of beers, and we were just sitting like, we're going to learn how to play this, and we're going to sit and play this game. And we played a whole game, and it took quite a while. Not going to lie, it took a few hours.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. We enjoyed it. And it was very kind of back and forth. Like, it did feel, for the most part, like I said, you know, like the Empire was kind of dominating everything, but I think there was a part of the game where it just kind of clicked as to how you're meant to play the rebels for my girlfriend. And she's like, okay, I need to do these objectives. I need to bring that timer down. That's how I win.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, she's just like, the timer is coming down and down and getting closer and closer. And I was like, oh, I need to
find, is that
like,
rebels?
Even, yeah, like even when I found where the rebel base was, I was like, I don't have enough units near there to actually invade it.
Uh-huh.
So I had like a good, you know, turn or two of just moving things. And the thing, one of the smart mechanics, like to limit the amount you can move your soldiers per turn, is you can basically only move an army
once, like
one planet.
Yeah.
Because when an army is in a system with a leader, it can't move out of that system.
Yeah, because otherwise what you could do would be, it would be like tag teaming.
Yeah, you can just like daisy chain it across the entire board and just move an entire army from one side of the board to another. But
the fact that they've thought of that and they've, you know, they've made it a hard, fast rule is...
Yeah. And it's smart.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the rebel stuff lets you kind of pop up on planets with, you know, a couple of troops.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much anywhere. So the rebels can kind of pop up anywhere and have little tiny armies everywhere. Whereas the Empire is this big, massive, hulking thing, and so you have a little bit of everything spread out everywhere, but then if you want to attack a rebel base, you need to make sure that you've got everything mobilized nearby.
Yeah.
And so you end up with a good couple of turns of just getting things in position.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, my Death Star was nowhere near the rebel base, so it was useless.
Yeah. One of the other things that I like is, this is Fantasy Flight have been doing this for quite a load of their games, is the way the instruction book, the rule book is set out.
Very smart.
So you end up with two books, and the first book is, it's Learn to Play. And it's the object of the book is to get you playing the game as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And it takes all the concepts and it gives you everything, and it says, you know, for your first game, just do this, this, and this. But after that, then you can, you know, then you can do this. But it touches on it. It doesn't go into too much detail about it. But essentially, if you've read that book, you will be able to play the game.
Yeah. It's actually, because of the way that's laid out, it's one of the few kind of board games that I actually, we found it easier to learn to play it by doing a couple of rounds. Rather than, like most board games, it makes more sense to read through the whole rules first, do a kind of, maybe a practice round by yourself.
Uh-huh.
And then teach the other player how to play it. This very much felt like, we have this beginner rule book. It kind of lays out step by step how to play.
Yes.
And then if we get confused by anything later on, when things get a bit more complicated, there's a second rule book that has everything in a bit more detail.
Yeah, and it's basically, it looks like a big index.
Yeah, basically. What ended up happening was that my girlfriend sat with the starter book and was kind of dictating the kind of, you know,
just the flow of the game.
Yeah, the flow of the game until we got used to it, and I was sitting looking up individual rules when we needed to.
Yeah.
And it worked perfectly. I really liked it.
Yeah. It's just, you know, well thought out of. And again, it's a very, it is an expensive game.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yep. But you, you know, we unboxed it and
stuff,
yeah, we're just looking at all the pieces and things like that, and that was what we said was, Jesus, this is a lot of money, but you can see where that money went.
You get three Death Stars.
Well,
one of them's not finished, but
two and a third.
Yeah, but to be fair, the unfinished one, you know, is made up of more pieces.
Yeah.
It's quite good that there's little miniatures. The more detailed ones you have to construct.
Yes.
Slightly.
Yeah.
I found the Star Destroyers a little bit finicky to clip together, but you know, it's one of those things you do it once.
Yes.
Because they never have to come apart
exactly,
again.
Exactly, yeah.
The Death Stars were fine, because the Death Stars are giant eggs.
Yeah.
Well, they're fine.
It is an amazing game. If, I don't think, I think you need to be a little bit experienced with board games, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting though, because it's at its heart, it's a war game. Like, it's very different from other war games. I mean, to be fair, I've not really played many other war games, but just because the combat is simplified to the point where it's kind of there. It's there so you can invade planets and stuff because it needs to be there.
Yes.
But it's kind of not the focus. Which I kind of, in some ways, like, I understand why it's that way, because it means the combat's really quick. You never really end up bogged down in battles.
Yes.
But like, sometimes there'll be some back and forth, like you move onto a planet and then, you know, your opponent strikes back again.
Yes, yeah.
But I felt there is a lot of... I don't know, there's stuff I didn't like about the combat.
Yeah.
Like, it never felt satisfying. It felt like the... So when you... I guess we should play how combat works. When you want to invade a planet, or you want to battle in general, you put a leader down on the planet you're moving to, you move the units to that planet, and then you kind of have a showdown with whatever planet, whatever units are there of the opponent.
Yeah.
The opponent can put a leader there as well to counter this.
Yes.
And if they do, then both leaders collect tactics cards based on little numbers that they have on the side of their portraits.
Yes. Sort
of
like, yeah.
There's two separate decks, one for space combat and one for ground combat.
Yeah.
And you deal with both these separately. You deal with space combat first, and then you deal with ground combat afterwards.
Yes.
So you can end up, theoretically, with a planet that you have wiped out all of the opponent's ships, but you don't have any ground forces on there because they killed them all.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool thing in its own way. But I always found that the way the combat works favors the aggressor. It's really hard to defend because you move in and you take your tactics cards, and sometimes the tactics cards are, you know, you defend one attack or whatever, but the aggressor goes in, the aggressor goes first, rolls the dice, does damage, and kills a bunch of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they have an instant, like, major advantage, because there's not really much you can do about it.
No,
and if they have a big army...
Hang on, I think you played that wrong.
How so?
So, if you're playing and you get to attack first, okay?
Uh-huh.
So you roll, and you say, right, I'm going to do 6 damage to you. Okay. Uh-huh. And they can't cancel that 6 damage. That 6 uh-huh. damage will wipe out all their units. That's mm-hmm. fine. You put the markers on the units to show that those units are going to be destroyed, but combat happens simultaneously.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Because we did that wrong then.
So what happens then is the defender, then they roll their dice. And
they do damage as well. Okay.
So the tactics cards become your biggest, you know, your kind of ace in the hole.
Yeah. Okay, well, we just played that wrong then, because we were doing it like one at a time, and it's just like, well, the aggressor comes in, blows up a bunch of stuff, and then you fight back with what you have left.
Yeah, you don't have a chance to do anything, yeah.
Yeah. Or the Death Star shows up and you get everything the fuck out of there, because the Death Star doesn't have health. The Death Star is just, you know, it's indestructible. No one could destroy a Death
yeah.
Star. Yeah. You know, it's just there.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know at the next the next mission he's going to bring out the fire of the laser.
Yeah. My girlfriend didn't realize that at first, so I brought the Death Star in, and it counts as a space unit, so she had ships there and she fired at it, and it was like, no, you should have got them out of there. Like, there's nothing you can do. Like, you fire my Death Star, but there's nothing. Like,
yeah,
get your ships out of there, because my Death Star's going, you know, turn by turn. In fact, there was another time where she didn't have a leader, so you can only retreat if you have a leader there.
Yes,
because you put the leader on our base, and it's the same thing as the other movement stuff. You put them on an adjacent planet, and then you move the units to that planet. So I moved Death Star, and she didn't have a leader to counter with. And so she's just sitting there as I, like, we pretty much could have just, you know, destroyed them. But I was like, no, I'm going to roll dice. And we're sitting, roll dice one by one. Your ships are going to go down one by one. And you're going to sit and watch as they slowly die. You fire back if you want. It does nothing. But that's the Death Star's a fun thing.
Right. So does it?
We never.
I only used the Death Star to blow up a planet. I didn't use it in combat. Does it actually get dice rolls?
Yeah, it's got combat values.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it counts as a chip. It can also transport units.
Yes, no, I know it can do that. Yeah.
Which is how your units don't get blown up when you blow up a planet. If you have units on it, they can hide inside the Death Star.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Death Star counts. It's got a damage value on the little. I quite like that as well. They had the little card that kind of explains what all the units are and their damage values
yes.
and their health values,
yeah.
which is useful because even when we're like setting up, like my girlfriend was looking through the rules and the setup things, like, oh, you put, you know, three calamari cruisers on this ship, or well, not three, but you put like a calamari cruiser on this planet,
yeah.
and she was like, I don't. Which one's those?
And it,
like, we know a lot about Star Wars, but you know, we don't always necessarily remember exactly what these cruisers look like. And then we looked at the card, and it's like, oh, it's that. It, you know, it's got a picture next to it, so you know.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at those things, and I knew what they were called, and I thought, gee, you know, I may be a wee bit sad. I don't know. And then I was explaining the rules to my girlfriend. It was as we're setting it up, and she was saying, right, what do I need? I said, oh, you need a Carillion Corvette and a Calamari Cruiser. Without looking, without thinking, well, one of them and one of them, and I thought, I don't feel as bad now.
Yeah, we didn't, like, we got most of the stuff, but it was like, it's the same thing as, the like, conclusion we came to was, the Empire, like, just in terms of the films in general, like, the Empire has the more memorable, you know, ships and units and mechs and stuff like that. You know, like, everyone knows what an AT-AT is.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what Star Destroyer is. Everyone knows what TIE Fighter. Well, TIE Fighter's maybe slightly different. Because you look at Rebels, you know what an X-Wing is.
Yes, yeah.
You don't necessarily know what the bigger ships are.
Or a Y-Wing or a B-Wing.
Yeah, exactly. You go into a bunch of stuff like that. Or an A-Wing. Or, which, to be fair, the Y-Wing's the only one that's in this, isn't it?
The Y-Wings, the Snowspeeders.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and the Snowspeeders.
Yeah.
But you may not necessarily know what most of those are. But then the Rebels have the much more memorable heroes.
Yes.
Like the leaders. Because it's like, on the Empire, you've got, you know, Emperor Palpatine and, you know, Darth Vader and Boba Fett and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then you also have, like, a bunch of, you know, it's like, here's that one pilot from that thing. You might know the name if you're super into it. But if you don't, his name isn't actually mentioned in the movies. So you probably don't know his name.
Exactly, yeah.
Here's a bunch of generals that got called by their name once in the entire trilogy.
Yeah.
Might know who they are, you might not. And then, you know, the Rebels have Han Solo and Chewbacca and Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker. Two versions of Luke Skywalker.
But they also have Mon Mothma.
That's true, they have Mon Mothma, which is a bit more, I don't know, it's memorable to us, but not super memorable in terms of...
But yeah.
It still is a bit more in depth.
No, I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely need to play a lot more of that.
Yeah, definitely. Because even with using, like, playing the combat incorrectly, like, we had a ton of fun with that game.
Yeah. I often find that with most of the, you know, your big box games. Actually, any board games that we tend to play, your first playthrough, you are going to make mistakes. You aren't.
Wrong. Definitely.
And as long as everyone's, you know, having fun and you've got no, you know, nobody's, you know, scouring over the rules with it.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing, like, we were doing the combat wrong and the Empire, you know, had vastly more units, so being the aggressor was kind of the main thing, and so I had a slight advantage there.
Yeah.
And I did win the game, but it came stupidly close even with that.
Yeah. And all it does for the next time is, like, well, you know, next time I'm not going to help you. It creates that little bit of a competitive edge. And
I think next time I'm going to play as the Rebels. I really want to try it out as the Rebels because that seems like an interesting.
Yes, yeah.
Like, the Empire has its own kind of cool mechanics, but at its heart, the Empire is the most wargamey part of it because your goal is to find and conquer a planet.
Yes, yeah.
So you're going out finding and conquering planets.
Yeah.
And the Rebels are more, hey, I'm doing all this cool shit behind the scenes, and then, sure, maybe you've got a mission that lets you see what my objectives are, but you're not going to know until I finish them.
Yes.
And then it's too late.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. It was really good.
Yeah, I loved it. It was.
C- Cool.
It was a ton of fun.
Excellent. I forgot another board game that we did play.
Which one?
We played Cat Tower.
Oh, yeah. You sent me pictures of it.
Yes.
I saw on Facebook as well.
Yeah, so Cat Tower is a fun little game where it's a dexterity game. You're playing, and it's really weird as well once you first get this game because the game...
Really? A game called Cat Tower is weird.
The cards, what you do with them is you bend them and then you stack the cards on top of each other.
Damaging cards, this sounds fucking terrible.
Exactly.
Sounds like everything I hate about video card games.
Yeah, so these cards actually come with folds made into them and they're quite thick. The cards are rather thick.
That's
and then you fold them so that they can stand. You know, you're making this little, it looks like a table made out of a playing card. And then, a cat table. And you're stacking these cards on top of each other. The game has, for each player, you give them 7 cards. And then you take turns and there's a dice and the dice will, you roll the die and it'll tell you how many cards you need to stack on your turn, or you may have to take one of your opponent's cards. So you're helping them and stack that. And if you fail, you get the penalty. So yeah, on your turn, you're stacking a card into the tower. If the tower falls, you take 2 cards back into your hand. And then the tower stays as it is, and play continues. Lot of fun, very, very silly game, quite fast paced, and a hell of a lot of fun. You can pick it up for round about, say, £15 should be the mark that you're looking at. It did sell out it sold very well when it came out here, so there are only a few copies left. You know, there may be some people that are unscrupulous and selling it for a bit more. But yeah, around about the 50 mark, you should be able still to pick it up. Highly recommended. We also had a lot of fun where we'd played half of the game and we left this cat tower built and it was halfway built. And we stopped so we could make some dinner. We ordered a takeaway and it came and we're having our dinner. And the cats were very interested in this pile of cards.
Of course they
are. Yeah, and there was cards everywhere at the end. That was quite cool. But yeah, highly recommended. Definitely check it out. And incidentally as well, the third game from Aza Chen, who made Cat Tower, he also made Kitty Paw, which we've spoken about on the podcast several times.
Likes cats.
Yes, he likes cats, but Cat Box, which is the last one in the series, I would say, that is just got its Kickstarter. It's went with Grail Games. They're bringing the games to European markets. It's currently on Kickstarter. You can back it for, I think it's $20 Australian, which roughly translates into, with postage, £11.
That's not bad.
Yep. So, check that one out if you like the look of it. You should pick it up as well.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, my girlfriend really wants it.
Yes. I think is that us for what we've played this week? I know it is for me.
Yeah, I think that is.
Cool, excellent. Do you see anything noticeable or mention worthy, discussion worthy in the news?
Dark Souls, the board game.
Oh, yeah.
It's on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It looks all right.
The miniatures.
The miniatures look gorgeous.
Yeah, so it's...
They're some of the nicest looking miniatures I've seen. They're renders, to be fair, but they're nice.
It's touting itself as a miniature exploration game.
Uh-huh.
So essentially what that is... It's the map is made up of tiles and you're flipping these, you shuffle these tiles, put them out to make the map, and as you move across them, you turn them over to see what you've uncovered. There is miniatures that represent the bosses and you're fighting them. Looking at the combat for this and the gameplay, it is very, very stripped back and it's very bare bones. It's very basic.
Yeah. To be fair though, I've seen people look at that as a positive thing. I'll try to find... So I've been reading forum posts and stuff like about it. A lot of people that have been reading the rules stuff like that have been comparing it to. I can't remember the full name of it because you keep finding the initials, which is KD.
KDH,
Oh,
Kingdom Death Monster.
King of Death Monster, yeah. People keep comparing it to that
It's
and
not.
saying that. Really?
No, it's not. It is not. Kingdom Death Monster is essentially, it's a legacy game. It's a story game. This is not like Kingdom Death Monster. So it's quite strange to see the makers of this game. They have went out and they're going after the miniature collectors from the board game, the board game side of things, but they're targeting people that love the video game, obviously. But when you have a look on like Board Game Geek and you look in the forums there's people that are saying, it's just rolling dice for combat. There is also, it's like a deck of cards that you shuffle them and you learn the attack pattern from that, but by the time you've learnt it, it's time to shuffle the deck again.
Kind of a shame. It might be all right, but yeah.
It is a huge game. It's quite a lot of money. And I don't like the series, so
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the thing with Image, is it's expensive as hell.
yeah.
It's oh God, what's the minimum price for it?
£85, no, £80.
£80 and
I
then shipping.
shipping so that if you're in the UK, that's another £7. So you're looking at £87 shipping. Yeah, you're looking at another two, three.
It's expensive, and like it has a decent amount of components, so there's a bunch of different decks of cards that do different things. There's just a bunch of dice, there's a bunch of miniatures, and the miniatures look really nice, and there's a bunch of grid stuff for the area that you're exploring. But it's hard to look at a game that's that expensive and then compare it to other games that are that expensive, like one we both may have just bought
Exactly, yeah.
that was in fact slightly cheaper
Yes.
and had a lot more.
Yes.
Like, and not just to go by a pure numbers thing, but Star Wars Rebellion has 150 miniatures in it. I'm just saying. Just say 150, it's a lot of miniatures.
Yes, yeah.
They're not necessarily all the best quality miniatures.
No.
Those Death Stars don't fit together perfectly sometimes. You have to kind of force them a bit.
Yep.
But there's 150, a lot of miniatures.
Yeah.
There's like, what, three bosses in this? Four bosses in
Yeah.
this? Not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, there's two bo yeah, two bosses in this,
There's two
and
bosses.
there's five mini bosses.
Yeah, two bosses, five mini bosses, four playable characters. There are three, six, nine, 12 plus four. There's 16 grunts.
Yeah.
And
Like,
that's it. That's your miniatures.
it's a cool concept. It may still be all right. We don't know.
Yeah, this you're not going to like every board game, and every board game is not going to be for you.
Yeah.
Same as the video games. I hope it turns out good for the people that want it.
I feel like they are.
I think.
I think they're overselling the game with
Yeah.
the renders of the miniatures they're using.
Yeah.
Because those are very clearly renders, and they even say like work in progress versions in the corners. Like they're gonna look a bit more 3D printed by the end.
Yeah, I think this is closer to the Kickstarter that we had for the Ghostbusters game.
Yeah.
The gameplay is not going to be the best. The miniatures probably will look, pretty decent.
Yeah, they'll probably look good, but they're not going to look, as pristine and perfect as they do in
Oh
these
no.
pictures. They're gonna have some rough edges and some, bits that haven't been kind of pulled down properly. Like, that's the thing about the Star Wars stuff. Like Star Wars Rebellion, those miniatures are very clearly 3D printed because you could, they've got that look and feel of a 3D printed thing where you're like, oh, this is where. If someone was hand making this, they would have sanded it down a bit more. They would have
Yeah.
not had these little bits of plastic kind of sticking off the inside of them because that's,
Yeah.
like 3D print stuff has a very distinct look and feel. I mean, the Rebellion stuff still looks great,
Yeah.
but they don't have a lot of detail to them. They look pretty simple because, you know, there's tons of them.
Yeah, yeah.
These, the renders look fantastic, and I hope they'd manage to pull off miniatures that look that good, but I don't think they will.
I mean, I've got Zombie 15, which was a Kickstarter game as well. The miniatures, if you have a look at, you know, they go look for the campaign right now and you'll see the renders. They're like this. They look absolutely stunning. But when you read through it, they purposely used a softer plastic. Now, when you use a softer plastic, they don't turn out as well. But again, you can tell it, they've come from a mold. These were molded.
Yeah.
Now, mold, 3D printing, more or less the same thing these days as well.
I think 3D print stuff often looks a little bit rougher.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. But again, it was a case of, you know, this is what we're showing you a picture here of, and this is what you ended up with. There were some people that took exception to it. And one of the most famous cases in... there's two. On Kickstarter, there was a game from Yellow Games called Guardians of... It's a superhero game. I forget its proper... It's Guardians of something. And they did the same as this. It was high-detailed renders that were showing on the page. By the time the models came, they just couldn't get them to look the same.
Yeah.
And the game shipped with these models, and they promised to do other models. There is also, Artipia Games have, they did a Project Elite. Again, exact same thing.
I think that was the one I heard about because there was a lot of uproar about that one.
And that still hasn't been resolved.
Yeah. So the only one I backed that was similar to that was Chaosmos, which I still haven't actually played. But that game came with a bunch of miniatures for each of the little aliens, and they had like a that game. You know, took ages to show up, and part of it was because they got the initial bunch of, you know, miniatures kind of shipped to them, and they looked at them and were like, we're not giving you guys these are not good enough. We're not giving you these in these qualities, so we're going to find someone else, we're going to get them printed again, we're going to hope they're better, and then we're going to give them to you, and end up with like some really nice miniatures. But yeah, it's just that same kind of thing. Some Kickstarters handle it differently. If they want to get it out the door as quickly as possible, they get it out the door as quick as possible and then say, well, maybe send you better ones later. Maybe.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the audience as well.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it looks like the people that have bought this game are buying it for that detail.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe good. I have a friend who's backing it, so.
All right, okay.
I'll play it with them so I don't have to spend 80 plus quid to buy myself.
Yeah.
Other news.
Yes.
The Xbox 360.
Yes.
Is dead. Like, officially, Microsoft is discontinuing the Xbox 360.
Oh, okay.
So they're not going to make any more of them.
Right.
Not too surprising. It's been a couple of years since the Xbox One came
out. Yep.
And the Xbox One's maybe not selling as amazingly as it should be, uh-huh. But you know, the Xbox 360, can't imagine it's selling
at all,
anything at all. Yet. Yeah. This isn't like the PS2, where you know people were buying PS2s well into the PS3 era because there were still games coming for it.
Yeah, and at least this time, what they've done is they've actually, you know, they continued the 360 for a little while because...
Yeah, it's not like the first Xbox.
Yeah, they discontinued the Xbox 2 days after launch of the 360.
Yeah, which is rough.
Yeah.
Could be worse. Could be, you know, like Sega with the Dreamcast. Just discontinue your console business. Mafia 3 is coming out 7th of October.
Right, okay.
I'm pretty excited for that. Those are great kind of open world games. Hoping this one's good.
Cool.
What else we got? I had other stuff open.
Red Dead Redemption 2, did you speak about?
Oh yeah, there was a leaked map for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yep.
Not much else about it other than there's a map, but it sounds like it's getting made.
Yeah.
That could be good.
Sure.
I like Red Dead Redemption. Hopefully you can still shoot your own horse in the head while you're riding it and then fall to the ground and be annoyed, because that was the best. Betrayal at House of the Hill is getting an expansion.
Woo!
It is called Widow's Walk.
Oh, right. Excellent. Dude, when's this happening?
It is happening... I don't know what this says. Oh, it's coming out October 14th.
Ooh.
Just in time for Halloween.
Oh, excellent. That's brilliant.
Hang on.
October 14th, you said?
Yeah.
Hang on a second. I think I know what that is. October 14th, of course. Yeah. October the 14th is Essen.
Okay, so it's coming out in Essen. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you're going to pick this up,
of course.
In German. The expansion includes 20 new room tiles, creating a whole extra floor of the haunted house, the rooftop, as well as 30 new cars to fill said rooftop with important items and events.
Oh,
it also features 50 new haunts.
Yes.
The game-changing scenarios that are uncovered by players during the game.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely picking that up.
Yeah. Someone posted this in the Facebook group. That's the only reason I saw it.
Ah, right.
It's cool. I think that's all open. Other than a bunch of Kickstarter pages have been opened. Oh, no, wait, Supergiant Games, the guys that made Bastion and Transistor, announced their new game called Pyre. It's like, I don't know, they showed a trailer, it looks really pretty. It's kind of hard to tell what it is. It looks kind of, I don't know, isometrically like their previous games, very pretty. Probably got a really good soundtrack. That's about all we know about it so far. It looks cool though. I like their games.
Cool.
In particular, Transistor. Yeah, that's all I've got here. Don't know if you've got any news.
Board games and expansions. We know that one of our favourites, Letters from Whitechapel.
Oh yeah, that's getting.
It's getting.
That's back in print as well.
Yeah, it's back in print, and its expansion, Dear Boss, is coming soon.
Yeah.
Is all we know.
Probably go buy that.
Oh, definitely buy that.
Actually, Ben sent something. What did Ben send?
Oh yes, yeah.
He sent something that was game related.
Right. Well, while you're looking for that, I will see if there's anything interesting in the new releases. So coming out the Friday after you've listened to that. So you've listened to this. So it's still the Friday coming for us. Star Fox Zero, which we've already spoken about a little bit. Coming out the week after that, Yo-Kai Watch from Nintendo. That's that new kind of strange kiddie television series thing.
Yeah, it's a kind of Pokemon-y thing.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest thing in Japan. It's also not necessarily new. Like, I think this is the first game finally coming out here, but
it's been in Japan for...
Yeah, for years.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not even sure it's the first game. Has it got a subtitle at all? I thought the first game already came out.
It just says Yo-Kai Watch.
Weird. Maybe it's a digital release or something.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm not sure. I thought it was already out, but I could be wrong. Also, I found this Penny Arcade news that Ben sent.
Yes,
it was,
that was it.
Yeah, so collectible card game Card Hunter is getting an expansion that adds Penny Arcade Acquisitions Incorporated, which is... I'm not sure what that is.
No.
According to this, it's a massive attraction at PAX events for the past 8 years. Players will be able to adventure as Acquisition Incorporated's Omen Dran, Gem Dark Magics, and Binwin Bronze Bottom in an original series that was written by PAX series Dungeon Master Jerry. I don't know what Card Hunter is. I've never heard of it. I imagine it's pretty big though if it's getting a PAX link.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure what it is as well.
Yay! News. I should really start reading Penny Arcade stuff again.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of fell off a while ago.
Cool. Excellent. I think that's it. Ratchet and Clank is eventually coming by the time you're listening to this. It should already be leaked
yeah.
in this country, along with Star Fox Zero.
Alien Nation's out next week.
Oh, yeah.
It's Housemarque's new
Twisted yes, shooter. Yeah. Battle... No, that's much later.
Yeah. Fuck Battle. Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff on Kickstarter.
Oh, I think I've seen something from NIS America. Stranger of Sword City comes out for the Vita on April 29th. Not too sure what that is. Probably some sort of thing with...
I think Severed is out next week as well.
All right, okay.
Which is Drinkbox Studios' new game. The ones by... The ones that made Mutant Blobs Attack. The other Mutant Blobs game, the name I keep forgetting... And Guacamelee.
Oh, yes.
I liked those games.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure you liked Mutant Blobs.
Yes, Mutant Blobs, yeah. I like that one. It was quite good.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure there's two Mutant Blobs games.
Wasn't there the one that came out on consoles, and then there was a modified version that came out for the Vita?
Yeah, that might be one.
Yeah.
I can check a release date for that, actually. I might be wrong.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else that we've forgotten, do you think?
Probably.
No, good answer. I wasn't expecting that. right, so then if you think we've forgotten something, you can send us an email and tell us what idiots we are. You can send an email to podcast@glitchfreegaming.com. You can find us on Twitter, tweet us @glitchfreegame and send your abuse there. No, actually, don't send your abuse because Ben, the editor of the site, he looks after the Twitter, so yeah.
Swear on. Yeah, Paul never even see it.
Yeah. So if you want, you can tweet us there, or you can find us on Facebook, and just search for Glitch Free Gaming. And you can find what's happening with the site, what's happening with the podcast. We put all the news and things on there as well. And you're more than welcome to interact with us through that as well.
Yeah, we read the comments and then we get sad because they're all adverbs for things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So the only other thing that we normally do at this time then is thank you all once again for downloading our drivel and listening to it and being with us for nearly 4 years now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yep. But we're not going anywhere. We're going to go to bed. We're going to go.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to bed. It's getting late.
Play some games, and then we will see you next week to tell you all about them all over again.
And to tell you all about Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm.
Oh yeah, we'll be doing that as well.
Yeah,
excellent. So if you want to play that, or you want to have a look, if you've got any questions about if there's any songs, what's our favorite songs in the game, or anything like that you want to know about the game, get a hold of us via social media or email as well, and we'll be talking about the game in great depth next week.
Yes,
or just playing the songs through your microphone so you can hear.
It's going to be the one podcast that we get taken down by Square Enix because it's just 2 hours of us playing the soundtrack of the rhythm.
Yeah. So, but until then, we will see you next week. So take care. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.